From KCRW, this is DNA, Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. COVID-19 has presented huge challenges and opportunities for a reset.
You know, maybe we start to move really slowly around the world and we think about travel in the way we used to in the days of sea travel, and it might take 6 months to get from one place to another to slow down those disease vectors. Maybe that's an interesting story.
Liam Young helms the fiction and entertainment program at SciArc. He imagines future worlds based on today's trends. So, where does COVID-19 take us? Find out in a moment. First up, Mitch O'Farrell is the councilman representing LA's 13th District, and he was struck by the sudden cleansing of the air that happened when we went into shelter in place. So he wants to find a way to hold on to this upside of the lockdown. He recently introduced a motion calling for a study into how to incentivize companies to let their employees continue telecommuting after shelter in place is lifted. But when cities are eager to rebuild their tax base, are they going to welcome anything that might slow commercial activity? I asked him.
We've been forced because of the pandemic to exist differently. And in business circles, that means working from home. Why not create an environment after the pandemic eases in which that becomes a regular practice across society in Los Angeles, meaning that we choose some days of the month, if not of the week, to encourage and come up with incentives for businesses to do teleconferencing and work from home entirely. And if we do that, even if it's one day every other week, that will have a profound and positive impact on our air.
What kind of incentives are you thinking about?
Well, one could be the business tax. There could be business tax reductions for companies that do this. There could be other advantages to give some sort of priority for carpool lanes to documented drivers with these companies that are taking advantage of these incentives, so that when they do travel, it's easier. The other side of that coin is congestion pricing, which has been talked about for decades, and then politically is usually impossible to create because of the resistance. So let's start with generating a report, because one thing is for sure. We want to reduce the effects of the illnesses that are brought on by bad, polluted air. And now's the time to do it.
Right now, cities in the region, including Los Angeles, are looking at a massive drop in tax base, revenues that would come from cars, parking, from businesses, from retail, etc. How do you make the case for extending telecommuting into the future if it jeopardizes municipal income?
Yes. Well, let's take a look. Let's take a comprehensive look at everything. So, if we go the route of incentives, for example, some reduction in the business tax, that's one thing. But let's also take a look at the reduction in wear and tear of our roads and public rights of way due to heavy traffic volume, because that in and of itself is an incredible cost to the city every year. So let's just see what this tells us. If we really go deep on this, it could possibly affect commercial real estate and leasing. All right, but we have a housing shortage. So what might there be the possibility of doing, transitioning some commercial properties into housing where we need it most? Let's just take a look at where we could go with this and have real data on what the effects and consequences should be or could be.
So some of this is already happening organically. One's hearing from companies that are already talking about expanding telecommuting for their employees. But what about when one gets into the realm of, say, light manufacturing, and an individual who now in a residential neighborhood chooses to 3D print out products in his or her garage or studio, and there's a neighbor that doesn't like it and complains to you. What would be your response?
We don't have to change the zoning. We don't have to impact the zoning at all, because for the most part, when we talk about telecommuting, we're talking about, if you will, white-collar type jobs where they're office jobs. But I think that's a good consideration to think of in advance, which is why we like doing these motions and exploring what that could all look like. I'm hopeful that as a society, as a world society, that this motivates us, and that could, you know, again, ramp up the whole green economy. And that could be the next era. You know, we have the automotive age, we have the communication age. Maybe we're heading into this sort of greening age. I don't know. But one thing is for sure, all of us thinkers and legislators and public policy folks should really take a look at how we can rebuild after this and lift more people up at the same time.
That was Councilmember Mitch O'Farrell. He represents LA's 13th District. And in addition to incentivizing continued telecommuting, he also wants to promote greening efforts in highly polluted, disadvantaged neighborhoods. You're listening to DNA. I'm Frances Anderton, and we are looking at the impact of the pandemic on buildings and cities. So now let's step a bit further into the future with Liam Young. Liam Young works at the intersection of architecture, futurism, and film. He runs a master's program at SciArc that teaches world building, that is, the art of conceptualizing future environments and the societies that live in them. I caught up with him online, of course, at his loft in downtown LA. He's sheltering in place with a new baby girl.
To be honest, this is the first time I've been at home for this long in about a decade. So if my baby grows up to be a James Bond villain that started the whole virus crisis just so she could have her mother and father next to her for the formative months of her life, then I wouldn't be surprised, because it all is working out just perfectly for her.
Not necessarily for parents, but definitely this rediscovery of family and community, to use an overused word, has been a pretty interesting byproduct of the pandemic and the shelter in place. And it's that we're going to talk about. But rather, we're going to look ahead. We're going to talk to you about what you're a specialist in, which is thinking about tomorrow today, and what kind of Los Angeles we might or could wake up to. Tell us what you're thinking about that.
Well, at the moment, I'm really interested in what the entertainment industry here in Los Angeles is going to do. I'm imagining that there's going to be a massive genre of what I'm calling Vi-Fi, or virus fiction, that's going to start to emerge. If you think about it, in 1816, when the volcano blacked out the sky and created this year-long winter, we had Byron and the Shelleys at their lake house concocting a range of iconic dark tales like Dracula and Frankenstein. So I'm wondering what this period actually generates in terms of stories and content. And I guess my hope for that is that rather than telling more contagion stories and more stories of viruses out of control, that Hollywood is going to start thinking about productive and positive stories that it could turn out of this. Because at the moment, we're living out a dystopian film in real time. I don't think the entertainment industry needs to keep on pushing out more dystopias. Perhaps we've had enough of that just by turning on the news, and maybe we're going to start talking about more optimistic stories about how we want to live together in a more preferable future.
You work in entertainment yourself. Are you hearing conversations about telling exactly those alternative stories?
At the moment, the only conversations I'm hearing is how people are going to pay the rent. The irony of the entertainment industry is that everyone in this town is freelance, which means that basically every production, every show, every movie has gone on pause. So there's massive populations of this city that literally have no income coming in. And you know, there's no support networks in this country for people like that. So unless you've been prudent and have been saving, it really is quite catastrophic for the industry. So right now is actually about survival.
Well, sure. And I will say, though, that there's presumably branches of entertainment that are doing okay. For example, there was an article about how Spotify is doing just fine, thank you very much, because podcasting, which can be produced at home using all the equipment that you and I are using to have this conversation, is very accessible. Are there some forms of entertainment that actually might be stimulated at this time period?
Certainly. I think what you're seeing now is that creators that work entirely digitally, that make animated pieces, their phones ringing off the hook because people like musicians are calling them up saying, I've just had to cancel my entire world tour. I want to do this online. I want to do this in VR. I want to do a big performance in Fortnite, like we saw Travis Scott just doing last week. How do I do it? Can you help me? Can you design my digital world for me? So I think that type of media is rising right now, and probably for the foreseeable future, before global air travel resumes to the intensity that it once did, we're going to see lots of things like that. So I think that's going to be an interesting transition. I think another unfortunate reality may be that when we do get out of the lockdown and everything does start back up again, we're going to see a second coming of reality TV, because there's going to be a real demand for content that can be produced very quickly.
Sure. It doesn't sound like you're welcoming the onslaught of reality TV. Let's talk about the physical environment. You and your students draw on, I guess, what's pulsating in contemporary times and sort of project or extrapolate from that into ideas for the future. What are you taking from now in terms of that storytelling about the future?
You're right that the most interesting science fiction is not any kind of prediction about tomorrow, but actually it's a way of looking in and thinking about the present. So I do think, as I mentioned, that there will be hopefully a groundswell in imaginary worlds being created that help us to analyze and diagnose this moment, or at least extrapolated or exaggerated out of this moment, so that we can start to think about how we might do things differently. I think some of the stories that might start to emerge if we really look at who we are right now is maybe stories around new ideas of mobility. At the moment, we think that we should be able to move quickly around the world. Like, dominant narratives of futures include things like Elon Musk's Hyperloop or supersonic jet travel, the idea that we can go from one country to another country in a matter of hours or even minutes. That's always been a vision of the future. But now what we see is the extraordinary problem that might give rise to, you know, disease vectors that, in this case, you know, have gone pandemic, but did so through 10-hour travel. Imagine how catastrophic it would be if that happened across an hour span. So I think we might see new stories that embrace the value and virtue of slowness. You know, maybe we start to move really slowly around the world, and we think about travel in the way we used to in the days of sea travel, and it might take 6 months to get from one place to another to slow down those disease vectors. Maybe that's an interesting story.
Just as long as it's not on a cruise ship.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, you know, we may actually think about lifestyle changes that allow for and celebrate stillness in a way that most futures have ignored.
And in doing so, would also celebrate the planet.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing right now is a little glimpse into the world that may be necessary if we fully embrace the what's required to deal with global climate collapse. You know, we're not going to be able to travel through the air the way that we normally do, because it puts so much carbon into the atmosphere Forms of mobility on ground are exceptionally problematic. Shipping food across huge distances and massive global scale manufacturing supply chains are also problematic. And the way that we consume, the rates at which we consume, are totally unsustainable and also in many ways totally unnecessary. And I think we're seeing little glimmers into what that world looks like. So in a way, it's a form of prototyping or prepping for the sorts of choices and lifestyles that we may soon need to leave. And I think that's an interesting moment. You know, we're seeing how fast nature can recover. We're seeing how much cleaner the air is without us going about our normal business. And, you know, it's these little points of crises that open the window a little bit so that you can actually start to see an alternative way of being beyond the death throes of late capital.
Sure, you did say the keywords late capital. And I do want to talk about one area that I know you've written about, you're very interested in, and it certainly has been an industry that has blossomed now, and that is delivery. Among the heroes, the essential services, are the delivery people who've been delivering food, delivering PPE, delivering all manner of things that people need to their homes. You have spoken in the past about the Amazon fulfillment center being tantamount to the cathedrals of our time, and that whole industry is something that we should get our arms around and appreciate. How are you feeling about the whole kind of delivery and distribution structure now?
It's interesting that one narrative we use is the hero of the delivery person or the person in the Amazon fulfillment center. Another narrative that may be more apt is the hostage. That I don't know how many people are choosing to stay on the road, to stay in the grocery store, to stay in the fulfillment center delivering the things that we need. They're paid so little, they're caught in this massive supply chain that they have to, in order to pay the rent, in order to do everything essential in life, they need to keep on turning up at work because most of them are on 0 hours contracts. So if they say no and decide to stay home, they're going to be fired. And they're paid so little that they live from paycheck to paycheck. So I am that if they choose not to come into work because they want to stay at home with their families and not get sick, they can't do it because there's no money to live off, because they don't have healthcare and they don't have other kinds of benefits or savings that one requires to live in this world. So I think what we're seeing is this new window into what is truly essential in the world, which are actually all of these thousands and thousands of people that lie behind the scenes of the modern world. We think about something like Amazon, you know, ordering a package as being an intensely digital and automated process. We log onto our phone, we click buy. In one click, we have something that in a couple of hours is delivered to our door. What that ease of operation implies and also hides is the thousands of people that are actually getting their hands involved in that process. There isn't a robot in the Amazon fulfillment store that's doing this all on its own. There are robots, of course, but there's a whole lot of people in that process that we often ignore. And what we're seeing through this process is just how critical the human still is in our highly technological world.
Well, Liam Young, it is so interesting talking to you. And I should say, in terms of the inequities that you're talking about that have been revealed by this pandemic, we are currently seeing them all around us. In LA, for example, rich and poor are having a very different experience of shelter in place. You live in downtown LA, which has gone through a huge renaissance in the last 20 years. Lots of people have moved in, lots of bars, restaurants, stores. It's also home to Skid Row and thousands of people who do not have shelter. How is it right now?
Yeah, I mean, LA's always been a city of extraordinary juxtapositions where you have people in tents, outside of gated communities near houses worth billions of dollars. I think now is a moment where you see that even more pronounced. Because all the businesses have all shuttered down and closed, it means that the homeless population has been able to spread out much further, because the shop fronts they normally would be prohibited from setting up a tent in front of are now not being accessed. So it's actually grown Skid Row, which was extraordinarily concentrated, is now really starting to consume much more of downtown because all the businesses are closed. So it really is a scene from a science fiction film, Downtown LA, because if I go up onto my rooftop, when I look out across all the condos, I see rooftop swimming pools, I see rooftop bars, this landscape of luxury that stretches as far as the eye can see, that sits as this city above, and then the city below at street level is a sea of tents. So that kind of sci-fi cliche of the city of the light and then the city of darkness, the city of wealth sitting above and serviced by the city of the poor below it, is actually playing out as a live action film here in downtown LA. So it's really is a vision from the future, but not a future that we want to lead, a vision of a cautionary tale that we've constantly been told may come if we don't think about what we're doing. It seems that dystopian cautionary tale is actually a live action present.
Well, Liam Young, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Always a pleasure, Francis.
Liam Young is head of the Fiction and Entertainment Program at SciArc, or Southern California Institute of Architecture in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you for listening to the DNA podcast. Stay tuned and stay well.